Ooh, Freakonomics.
Careful listeners of The Takeaway will know that the Freakonomics theme needs to be replaced by a super Freakonomics theme. All week long, our friend Stephen Dubner, co-author of the Freakonomics book and blog, and the new book, Super Freakonomics, Global Cooling, Patriotic Prostitutes, and Why Suicide Bombers Should Buy Life Insurance. He's going to be here all week. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
The premise of your week with us is this. First of all, with two books under your belt now, and, you know, a years-long collaboration with your co-author, a University of Chicago professor, Professor Franklin, it seems to me the Freakonomics view of life itself is a lens that needs to be explained. What is the Freakonomics way of looking at things? And then I want to apply it to healthcare here in this segment.
So it's pretty simple. Basically, we use what are broadly thought of as the tools of economics,
which Steve Levitt and I,
who is, as you mentioned, a research economist at the University of Chicago. And we use those tools, which are usually applied to what most people think of as the economy. So, so there's a whole breed of economists who are what you call macroeconomists, who deal with the big economy that people think about: inflation, the stock market, recessions, jobs, and so on. We don't touch that. I could talk about for hours why we don't touch it, but it's not that interesting and it's not apropos right now. What we do is we do something more called microeconomics. And what that is really using the tools of economics, which are ways of thinking about the world and some techniques, and apply them to things other than the economy, whether it's prostitution or global warming. So it's what we call the economic approach. It's a way of looking at the world kind of with neither fear nor favor. We are equal opportunity offenders. There are times when people on the left will hate us, times when people on the right will hate us. Sometimes they'll decide to hate us together. Well, we don't hope for it. What we do hope to do is we do hope to produce or provoke even conversation of a different sort that's usually provoked. And the reason is this. Most people, when they think about things, whether it's big things in their lives or small things, they approach them with a kind of predisposed bias that is built on emotion and anecdote and opinion. We try to throw all that emotion, anecdote, opinion out and use data instead. And that's the goal.
Take lots of data and throw assumptions out and you get
super Freakonomics.
All right, let's.
You didn't buy the song. That was too expensive.
No. Well, we can afford our own branding for you, yeah. Stephen Dubner. Let's just apply this. Take data to some of our assumptions about healthcare. And of course, the healthcare reform debate is filled with all sorts of conventional wisdom and assumptions. First of all, let's apply it there. And what surprises do you come up with?
Well, first of all, let me say it's been really interesting to read both sides of, let's say, all the media on this. When you read the New York Times, you get one picture. When you read the Journal, you get another picture. But what's interesting is that people are tearing apart the system and examining it in a way that we didn't usually. Mm-hmm. One conclusion that people are getting to a lot is cost is paramount, which we can talk about. But another thing is the overconsumption of goods. Now, if you think about medical care, health care, not like a life-saving intervention, which we tend to think of it as, but instead as a good that we all consume, there's a great argument to be made that whenever you have an all-you-can-eat menu of any kind, think of it as you go to a restaurant, you pay $9.99 for the buffet, you're probably going to eat more than if you're buying a la carte.
Is that how you would characterize the current state of the healthcare economy, all-you-can-eat menu?
Well, if you think about it depends what you have.
For those who are covered.
Yeah, it depends who you are and what you have. But a big problem is that a lot of people have an all-you-can-eat medical plan, which means that they consume more. So one of the big problems seems to be overconsumption of resources, and that does a few things. Ties up doctors, crowds out the sick, results in a lot of unnecessary medical care. Basically, what it contributes to is a lot of rising costs.
Now, so the presence of the all-you-can-eaters affects people at the high and the low end of the spectrum because it crowds out resources for everybody.
Absolutely. Okay. If you're one of the many millions of people who can't get insurance or doesn't want to buy insurance because it's too expensive, you have to think about what's making it so expensive. One of the things that's making it so expensive is the plans that people own where they can consume a lot and do. That racks up an awful lot of costs. Plus, there's demand. That's the other thing.
Right.
You know, we like to talk about how terrible healthcare is in this country. Well, if it were so terrible, people wouldn't be consuming so much. I really think that is a canard that should be dealt with more often.
All right. So doctors can control costs. They're in control here?
Well, it depends. This is where it gets sticky.
Right.
The incentives are, as you know, misaligned and perverse all over the place. Different doctors, depending on what specialty you're in, depending on which building you're in, their incentives for giving care are they're various. Let's say
so a TB doctor has one set of incentives and a plastic surgeon has another set of incentives.
Well, I'd have to think about that particular, but look, we write about oncology and chemotherapy in the book. Now, this is a a depressing example and a startling example to me. So we looked at chemotherapy. Turns out that if you look at the Medicare budget, for instance, 20% of Medicare cases are cancer patients, okay? But the drug budget, Medicare drug budget, about 40% is consumed by cancer. Now, a lot of that has to do with the fact that chemotherapy is incredibly expensive. So you say, well, wait a minute.
It's also popular. I mean, people it's very popular. You're diagnosed with cancer, chemotherapy, that's the next step. Absolutely.
Now, here's the problem. On some cancers, and in some cases, chemotherapy is incredibly effective. In many cases, and in many cancers, however, chemotherapy is remarkably ineffective. For a long list where it's been shown that chemo has almost zero discernible effect, including multiple myeloma, soft tissue sarcoma, and many cancers of the solid organs. Now, the question is, why do we consume so much chemo when it's not so effective in so many cases, not in all cases? One reason is that oncologists stand to profit from administering chemotherapy, not just diagnosing the use of it, but from administering. So roughly 50% of an oncologist's revenue stream is actually from the sale and administering of chemotherapy drugs. This is not to say that most oncologists aren't working very hard to do everything they can for their patients, but you can't ignore the profit motive.
Who's going to tell the oncologist to sort out the ineffective chemotherapy treatments from the effective ones based on your data?
Well, this is what's really interesting about it. You think, who's paying for this? Well, the people who tell oncologists that they're going to pay for the chemo generally are the healthcare CEOs and the CEOs of corporations and institutions that buy insurance for their
right.
employees. The fact of the matter, you know, the most emotional moment I had in reporting this book was when I was talking to a very, very good and very bright and very devoted cancer doc who's a research oncologist and a clinical oncologist. He told me, here's the problem. We know that chemo is often very ineffective. The problem is, even for us oncologists who've done it many times, it's very hard to sit face-to-face with a person and say, I'm sorry to tell you this, you have cancer, you're dying, and there's nothing we can do. So even for a doctor, that's hard, and therefore chemo comes in often.
And indeed, the healthcare reform debate really doesn't include these kinds of tough questions. On tomorrow's show, we're going to ask Stephen Dubner what Freakonomics has found out about global warming, some unusual and unpopular ways that we might cool our planet in the Freakonomics view of things. Tune in for that.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.